It seems investigating murders in South Carolina's Lowcountry is really turning into a thing. That's why we've created another podcast focusing specifically on the murder of Stephen Smith. We, of course, have continuing coverage for you on the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. But if you want a channel exclusively dedicated to the coverage of the investigation and finding justice for Stephen Smith, be sure to search and press subscribe to The Murder of Stephen Smith. Search that wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe as we bring you daily coverage of the investigation into the murder of Stephen Smith and the quest for justice. Search The Murder of Stephen Smith wherever you get podcasts. Hope you're having a great weekend. This is our week in review, a look back at some of the most compelling stories we've covered for you in the last 7 days. Brand new episodes back Monday, right here.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We're going to dive into the Daybells in a way that we really haven't before, getting some very interesting insight by someone who is very close to the case, has been following it from day one, is from the area, knows a lot of the key players in it, has talked to them, and is even going to be at Lori's trial coming up here in the coming weeks, and is going to be our correspondent on the ground about the trial, covering it and giving us updates throughout the day as cameras and such are not allowed in court. She will be, and giving us those play-by-play moments of what's been observed. Lauren Mathias is joining us. She's from the podcast Hidden, a true crime podcast. She's also on television with me every single Friday night on Banfield on News Nation, where we examine Friday night theories. Lauren, welcome. I'm very excited to have you join us as a correspondent for the trial itself. But I'm also excited to kind of talk about the Daybells here initially with you on the air and to get some perspective, because this is a case that hits pretty close to home for you, kind of personal, right?
Yeah, it is personal, actually. At the time, we were living in St. George, Utah, which is it's a small southern Utah city, and the place that Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow met. Mm-hmm. Had we known, we would have been there at that fateful, unfortunate meeting.
Yeah.
But I was a TV reporter for 10 years, and my son was a year old, and I had just quit. And as I say, you can take the journalist out of the newsroom, but you can't take the journalist out of the girl. So I was a stay-at-home mom, getting used to being a stay-at-home mom. And I, being a journalist, I'm addicted to reading the news every day.
Sure.
And I remember the day that the first article came down from the AP Wire that two children were missing. It was December 2019. And I looked at the photo of Lori and the photo of Chad, and I read more about them. And it was just chilling. They were both LDS. I am LDS. I grew up LDS. Lori looked like every one of my friend's mothers growing up. Mm-hmm. And then I read that Chad Daybell had been a Mormon LDS author and lived in East Idaho, where all of my relatives are from, where I used to report the news. It hit so close to home. And I looked at them and I read the story. And of course, with my journalist background, I also understood that this was not good. Mm-hmm. This was not good. Something was wrong. This was not going to end well. And I still remember just staring at their photos thinking, how could this happen? The first article I saw, and lucky for me, I lived with a forensic psychologist. So every time he came home from work, from interviewing criminals at the prison, I would say, look at this. Help me understand this. I knew people that had met them. I was calling them again for no reason. We weren't doing a podcast. It was pure curiosity. And for the first time, I started joining Facebook true crime groups. I had never done that before. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic hit and I had even more time to obsess over this case and to ask more questions. And then with the pandemic, the prisons and jails shut down and my husband didn't have work. Mm-hmm. So we were able to honestly sit there and just talk and investigate and learn so much that we finally just started recording our real dinner conversations that we were having.
Mm-hmm. And this is a case that has so many layers and it goes so deep. One of the things that is always intriguing to me about this case is how they did start LDS. You being LDS, and I don't know a lot about that religion at all, but in your mind, can you understand how Chad's twisted belief system, I'm not talking murdering his kids or belief system, but how he was able to basically make a new version of this and kind of, you know, make something that was not LDS, but spread off of it in create this kind of twisted world of his and his beliefs?
Yeah, you know, I think that's actually been the major question I've had in my mind for the past 3.5 years. I would say at the beginning of this case with the missing children, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. It was mind-boggling to me. We've interviewed a lot of people. We've talked to a lot of people, family members of the Daybells, family members of the Vallos. You know, I've talked to those who have studied the LDS faith and learned more about this deep doctrine and the different groups of people that sort of adopt these extreme religions. I've gone so far as to attend the same conferences they did. I traveled to these conferences because this is exactly what I think I needed to understand at a personal level. And I think that there are also a lot of LDS people that are following this case for that same reason. They don't understand how this could happen. I can say after 3.5 years, I have come to a better understanding. Mm-hmm. But thank you for stating that, yes, these are extreme beliefs that aren't typically practiced in the LDS faith. Maybe some of them are some obscure beliefs that were maybe talked about in the early days of the LDS faith, and uh-huh. then they take these ideas and run with them and adopt them into their own, you know, minds. But I think a lot of it also has to do with psychology. What type of person adopts extreme beliefs, has these extreme beliefs, and what type of person takes it as far as murdering children?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I know people with some extreme beliefs, but then to take it this far, how does that happen? And I think that's the ultimate question my husband and I have been trying to answer from the very beginning.
You said that you were starting to get a better understanding of it, and you went to some of those conferences and saw the individuals, and not everybody who goes to those conferences of extreme beliefs are going to go murder their family. But how did you get a better understanding of it? Explain to me what you mean by that.
So growing up LDS, I think that I always understood, you know, the progressive members or the plea of the progressive LDS members. You know, I think that sometimes many of us in a certain religion, we put those that are part of a certain religion into one box. Mm-hmm. And I can certainly say that there are a variety of beliefs and a variety of members in the LDS faith, more than I think people realize. And I was completely ignorant to, first off, what was going on with some of these extreme beliefs. Like, I didn't know this group. I didn't know these conferences existed. Let's uh-huh. start there.
Okay.
I didn't even know. So I didn't even know, you know, and I was always telling people, you know, don't put us all in a box. And yet, while I'm saying this, I had no idea that not only were these conferences going on where people were really digging deep into, let's call it deep doctrine or historical doctrine of the church, that there was a large number of people doing this. And I actually think even grew during the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And on one end, you have a lot of progressive members of the LDS faith who, you know, are fighting for LGBTQ rights and hoping that the church progresses and continues to change. And the church has changed a lot since its origin, since its beginnings. But there's a whole other subset of members of the LDS church who feel the complete opposite, that They're concerned because of the changes in the LDS faith. They're concerned that the church is falling away from its foundation from the 1800s. And they want to go back to that. And they want, they feel that the leaders of the church, the prophet, you know, which is the head over the LDS church, it would be the equivalent of the Catholic Pope. I'm not saying the LDS church is as big as the Catholic Church, because some people get offended by me saying that. I'm just saying, if you understand what the Pope is to the Catholic Church, that's what the prophet is to the LDS Church.
Okay.
And they believe that the prophet is falling away. They believe that the prophet and the 12 apostles of the LDS Church, who are the top leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the LDS Church, also known as the Mormon Church, but the full name is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that the leaders are falling away and getting away from the roots.
Okay.
And in some ways they're right. You know, the church has changed a lot. I think most religions and churches do more than people think. And this, you know, no, people don't like change, and these small towns are isolated as well. You know, you take a smaller town that's isolated, that maybe the people there don't like change, and they see their own religion changing. They want to go back to the roots. So that's the beginning. And then they start investigating this history. I can tell you that Chad Daybell really did know his church history. Mm-hmm. And they don't like what's being taught in Sunday school, that it's whitewashed, that it's simple, and they want deeper. And these people start believing then in visions and dreams. And a lot of these conferences, the one I went to, has to do with energy healing and visions and dreams. Those things are not taught in the LDS Sunday school lessons.
Uh-huh.
And so that starts. It's just sort of like this snowball effect. So one thing, I'll explain this. Here's an example. One thing in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that is a fundamental belief is that prophets and apostles can still receive revelation from God and Christ. I don't know if that's too far off from the Catholic faith and believing that, you know, the Pope leads the church, but the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints members believe in modern day revelation.
Okay.
Thus, this sort of subset of people start to believe that if they're having dreams and visions, perhaps they're receiving revelation, and perhaps they're receiving revelation that the prophet and the apostles are falling away from the church. I think that's the start of it, the start of the snowball. And I think that with the internet, these people can find each other more willingly. And there was a site in Rexburg, Idaho called Avow. Uh-huh. It was a conspiracy theory site. It was actually dubbed a terrorist organization, but people would join. A lot of them were LDS. And then you add what you add to a lot of cults and paranoia, the sort of doomsday mentality, the second coming of Christ. So you throw that in to this idea that Christ is coming soon. A lot of revelations, you know, a lot of belief in the Constitution, you know, collapsing of wars, of famine. And so sort of those extreme prepare for the end beliefs start to appear. It's sort of like all these different things. And then they all get online and they read each other's posts and they validate one another. And it becomes just a little bit more extreme. Chad Daybell, I call an accidental cult leader in some sense. I think it was slow. It was like the frog in boiling water.
Yeah.
I think he was surprised that people started listening to him. I think he had always been overzealous in his religion. And we can get into the psychology of Chad Daybell too. Little things that, you know, weren't ideal, you know, a very black and white worldview. But he always sort of felt that he heard voices. And so then when you add this fear and this paranoia, and then he's given a platform on this site called Avow, and he's able to share his dreams and visions and people start listening to him, he gets a little bit further. Then he finds a necklace in his church building and decides that God gave it to him. And he starts using this necklace, or this pendulum, as he called it, and taking it to these conferences held at people's homes. And again, this wasn't church. This was people that felt that they weren't getting enough at church. So they would join with each other at homes. And then he started discussing what was called multiple probations, or, you know, also it's like reincarnation, but without being able to come back as an animal or a plant. You only come back as famous people in history.
Okay.
And he starts using this pendulum to tell people whether they were Joan of Arc or Jesus or Jesus's brother in a past life. And people are clinging to this. And then he starts being able to say, well, now I can tell who is light and who is dark. So he had this sort of obsession with good versus evil. So you take all these things and give them to Chad. And then he starts speaking at these conferences, and people just continue to give him this platform. And he starts to believe that he had near-death experiences. You know, it's just, again, the snowball is rolling. The snowball is rolling. And then here is this woman in Arizona, Lori Vallow, who starts reading all of these near-death experience books, who's longing for more, who grew up in a very strict religious environment. Her father is very religious, has sort of these same extreme beliefs herself. And then she starts reading Chad's books, and she starts getting to this doctrine with like-minded friends in Arizona. And they travel to this conference, and there's Chad speaking. You know, it really was like a match in fire. So do I still think it's extreme and crazy and unbelievable? Yes. Mm-hmm. But do I feel like I've been able to sort out how it happened bit by bit, piece by piece, a little bit more?
Yeah.
I think I've just really tried to understand this whole group of people. And I think it starts with these near-death experiences and these dreams and visions that they all believe they were having. And then you sort of give this power and format to the wrong person.
So it's almost like it's this perfect storm. There's this power that seems to be given, or believed that it's given, to an individual, not just a higher ranking member in the church or the prophet or someone who is at the top. It's anyone that's in there. And then he takes this one step further and almost starts just creating his own doctrine, his own beliefs, his own rules, his own way of thinking, which really have absolutely nothing to do with the real teachings of LDS. It's more so, I have this power, so I'm going to tell you this is what it is now, because I've had these visions and these dreams. And others who are like-minded in that thinking then cling on to it, thinking, oh, this must be a prophet, and he has this information, so we should follow him. And thus creates the perfect storm that you have of Chad Daybell.
Bingo. And he made people feel really special.
Yeah.
Particularly women, by saying, you were Joan of Arc in a past life.
Yeah.
And to add to what you just said, you just nailed it. Thank you. He claims to have had two near-death experiences. And each time, the first one was cliff jumping when he was a young boy. He says he jumped into the water, and as he came up, his veil was torn. In the LDS faith, I've always known it to be a metaphor, by the way, this veil that the LDS faith believes that we lived as spirits with Christ before we were born and came to this earth and received a body.
Okay.
And that a veil was put over our eyes before we came down. And that's why we don't remember this pre-mortal existence as spirits. My teaching growing up was that this was a metaphor. This was a metaphor, that the veil wasn't a real thing, right? Like a literal thing, a tangible thing. But Chad is so literal and considers it such a tangible object that he says he came up from the water and that his veil had been torn, which means he could see into the heavens. And yeah, he started to believe those things. And you're right, people want to believe those things. These like-minded people want to believe that he has these powers. They want to believe he's special. And so while they were all still LDS, they were teaching things very far from what the mainstream LDS church teaches today.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Laura Mathias, host of Hidden, a true crime podcast, along with her husband. We got more to come with Laura, and we're going to continue to talk about the day bells. And I'm going to ask the question, are there still people out there that believe in Chad Daybell's system of religion? It's coming up. Press subscribe so you don't miss that part of the conversation. It's on the feed in just a bit. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.